Hello, Marian Galevich here from the EIN eLearning Editorial Board. We would love your feedback on EINcast Weekly Neurology. Please help us to learn more about you, our listeners, and plan the future of EINcast by taking our short survey. If you do, you can enter our prize draw for the chance to win free registration for the EIN Congress 2025 in Helsinki. The survey will be online until the end of December 2024. Just look for the link in the episode description. And now, we hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Welcome to EINcast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to EINcast Weekly Neurology. My name is Alicia Coroni and I'm a registrar in neurology at the Geneva Memory Center. I'm also the past chair of the EIN Resident and Research Fellow section and one of the e-learning representatives for the Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Coordinating Panel. This month's topic is sex and gender in neurology, and in today's episode we will talk about navigating gender differences in neurology careers. My guest today is Professor Marianne de Visser, who is Emeritus Professor of Neuromuscular Diseases at the University of Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Professor de Visser is one of Europe's leading experts in the field of neuromuscular diseases and currently serves as the co-chair of the Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Coordinating Panel. Hello, Professor de Visser.
Hello, Alicia.
It is a real privilege to be interviewing you today on this important topic, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's really a privilege and an honor to be interviewed by you.
Thank you. So we know that despite the growing awareness of gender disparities in neurology and more in general in academic medicine, women and non-binary individuals remain underrepresented in leadership roles and face significant challenges such as gender pay gaps and other forms of discrimination. These challenges shape personal and professional journeys in neurology. So I would like to start with a question on your personal experience, Professor de Visser. So could you share with us your career journey into neurology and how gender has shaped your professional trajectory, including access to opportunities, mentorship or professional relationships?
Thank you for this question. Well, I have to admit, actually, I wanted to become an ophthalmologist. Yes, because I had strabismus as a child and I underwent eye surgery. And the ophthalmologist was a very friendly lady, which was rather unique in those days in which males dominated the medical community. So I wanted to be like her. She became my role model and she followed me on my personal journey. However, at medical school, I found out that ophthalmology was out of the question since I'm amblyopic, which would hinder me during surgery. So it became neurology, which I also found fascinating. I did my training quite a while ago. Those were different times, Alicia. I must tell you that that is an anecdote that I applied for a training position. And the professor asked me whether I was intending to become pregnant during my training. And I was completely flabbergasted. And he said, okay, let it be a gentleman's agreement that you do not become pregnant during your training. It would be now be unheard of, I think. That is an anecdote, just an anecdote. Times have changed, fortunately. But most neurologists were men at that time. Now more than half of the Dutch neurologists are female. And honestly, I never really experienced a glass ceiling. They often talk about a glass ceiling for females. I did never experience it. I seized my opportunities which came on my way. And I became a professor about 10 years after completing my training. And I always combined my clinical work with clinical research. And I was asked for positions beyond my work as a neurologist to enhance my managerial skills and to achieve a broader perspective on the Dutch healthcare and the Dutch healthcare system. Or, alternatively, I was asked to join boards because they needed a woman. They were quite clear about that. Honestly, I felt never offended by that. So this was about my journey, neurology and lots of jobs outside neurology.
It's a very interesting journey. And I think, as you mentioned, many things have changed through times in good ways, I have the impression, more than other. And it's nice also to hear a nice experience, as you mentioned, of having like access to opportunities. And sometimes we know that having access to opportunities or to follow our own pathway is also related to guidance, mentorships, and the support networks that we have. So we know from personal experience, but also from the scientific literature, that mentorship and support networks are crucial for career and personal development. So I'd like to ask you about your journey. So first as a mentee, and then as a mentor in neurology. So how have your experiences shaped your perspective, and what role has gender played in the mentorship dynamics that you've encountered in your experience?
Yeah, that's a very nice question. I had two male mentors. That's not surprising because, as I said, neurology was dominated by males at that time. One mentor, Jaap Bethlen, Professor Jaap Bethlen, who asked me to become his PhD student on a neuromuscular topic. And after completing my thesis, I was determined to further specialize in neuromuscular disorders, and I became his successor. And the second mentor was Dr. Andrew Engel at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, who was a giant in the neuromuscular community. I spent some time at his lab doing electron microscopic studies on muscle biopsies of patients with dermatomyositis, and that kindled my interest in myositis, and I'm still involved in myositis research. My two mentors helped me with shaping my career, and I'm very grateful for that guidance. And at that time, they did not discuss the challenges that I might have to deal with as one of the few female neurologists. These are different times, and I immensely appreciate that the European Academy of Neurology has introduced a mentorship program, as do lots of professional organizations currently. My own professional organization, the Netherlands Society of Neurology, for instance, also has established a mentorship program. And mentors can help with developing clinical and research interests, can give advice on designing a successful research project and on establishing a healthy work-life balance, but also on other issues such as equality, diversity, burnout, and more. And it's extremely important that someone who knows what it is all about listens and raises questions without judging. At my hospital, faculty's teaching performance is yearly assessed by the residents. And I wonder whether that would at all be possible for the mentors, you know, being assessed by the mentees. If that is not the case, I would recommend EAN to organize such an assessment. There are mentors who have the natural gift of being a good mentor. However, one can also learn to become a mentor. And now for myself, I've supervised numerous PhD students and fellows. And I was their mentor, guiding them in the sometimes difficult journey to combine clinical work and research, in particular if they also had a family. But I've always enjoyed being their mentor.
Yes, and as you mentioned, what I really liked that you mentioned is the process of becoming a mentor. And it's also a dynamic process. And you learn also through your mentee some things and that maybe you're not so sensitive about because of your gender, because of your background. And we know that on top of gender, there are other identities that intersect with that. So, and maybe individuals with intersecting identities can face even greater challenges. So experiencing lower visibility and representation. How do you think that factors such as ethnicity and socioeconomic background intersect with gender to shape experiences in the field of neurology?
Yeah, that's a very important topic. If we want to offer appropriate care to our patients, we need to have knowledge about sex and gender differences regarding the prevalence, clinical presentation, and treatment of neurological diseases, and also about the role of ethnicity on neurological disorders, as you mentioned. In Amsterdam, for instance, there is a huge multi-ethnic population, and research showed that Ghanese people who live there and people of Hindustani origin had a high risk of strokes because of a high prevalence of hypertension in the Ghanese people and a high risk of diabetes in the Hindustani individuals. And in the New England Journal of Medicine, there are numerous papers which show that ethnicity often plays a negative role in access to care, not only because of the genetic factors associated with ethnicity, but also because these individuals often have, as you mentioned, a lower socioeconomic status.
Absolutely. And maybe I would like to build more on the topic of patient care quality. So in fields like neurology, where, as you mentioned, disease presentation, response to treatment and outcomes can be influenced by gender, but also by other factors, how can neurologists actually ensure that they provide gender sensitive or like that are sensitive to other factors that can actually influence the care of their patients?
Yeah. Well, don't you think that education is key here? So diversity should be part of the neurological training and also part of the continuous medical education. It's not only something that early career neurologists have to learn, but in particular, I think, also advanced neurologists. And after all, it's an essential part of the daily clinical practice. And in addition, much more research has to be done on this topic. Why, for instance, do women with a stroke have a poorer outcome? Why do they have less access to care-intensive facilities? Why do we consider migraine a female-only disease and are men hardly represented in trials? And we also need to be aware of the challenges that sexual minority people experience if they present with a neurological disease. And this should also be part of the regular training. Senior neurologists should be supportive of this part of the training, which is currently often neglected. And I'd like to mention one thing. The EAN has participated in establishing European training requirements, ETR. You are familiar with that for neurology. And the most recent ETR was published in 2021. I looked at the ETR, not a single word about equal representation of sex and gender in the workforce. However, a mentorship was recommended. They actually recommend that to link every mentee, every trainee to a member who will follow the trainee during the whole period of training for monitoring progress with help of a continuing portfolio and adjusting it if necessary. End of the quote.
Yeah. And I think, as you mentioned, like in my experience as well, like when I was in medical school, this was not very transparent. We were not talking about differences in the workforce. We're not talking about differences even in the presentation of neurological diseases or other conditions. And now I have to say I'm really surprised, positively surprised. During my training as a neurology trainee, I actually was exposed to many courses on like how patients present differently based on their gender or their ethnic background or socioeconomic background. So as you mentioned, things are changing. Maybe it would take some time for it to get to the ETRN level, but we're working all towards it. So I'm very positive that the change will arrive. And I would like to touch a little bit more on workplace dynamics and how like diversity can have an impact on research and clinical care quality. So we know that increasing diversity in academia, you just mentioned, is crucial for broadening research perspectives and improving patient-centered care, particularly in fields like neurology, where many unanswered questions regarding the pathophysiology and treatment of disabling diseases could benefit from different perspectives. There is a growing also literature showing that a more inclusive and diverse academic environment could bring fresh insights, ultimately leading to more creative solutions that reduce suffering and improve patient care. So what was your experience regarding the impact of gender diversity of neurology departments or research teams on one side on the work culture, but also on research quality and clinical care outcomes?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, when I started, less than 15% of the neurologists was female, and now more than half of the neurologists in the Netherlands are women. But I totally agree with you. I'm of the opinion that there should be a balance in gender composition. If possible, an equal number of men and women. And that also holds true for the research teams. It's well known that diversity in organizations and teams contributes to well-being, to job satisfaction and innovation, and consequently leads to better functioning and sustainable commitment of healthcare professionals. There is also ample evidence, as you already mentioned, that appropriate care can only be given if there is awareness of the relevance of gender-sensitive care. And talking about research, credits is due to the EU, the European Union, which took specific action to overcome persisting gender gaps in research and inequalities and published its gender equality strategy already in 2020.
So yeah, we're coming a long way.
I think these are wonderful initiatives. And, you know, we are only starting, but we're getting there.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And so we know that addressing the issues and challenges that we've just discussed is very complex. And existing measures often fail to tackle the root causes, such as an equal distribution of caregiving responsibilities and deeply ingrained cultural biases, which anyway require long-term societal and educational reforms, as we mentioned. What do you think are the key changes that need to happen in neurology to address gender disparities in both education and practice?
Yeah. Well, I already mentioned that education is key because through education, we can raise awareness amongst both the early and the advanced career neurologist. I also think that there should be more focus on sessions within the ENA scientific and educational program at the annual congresses. And we are very lucky, Alicia, that the current president, Elena Moro, took the initiative a couple of years ago to establish a task force on sex and gender, and now transformed into a coordinating panel on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And this means that gender-sensitive care and education is taken seriously by the board and will stay on their agenda. And this is extremely important since during this EAN cast, we identified many areas in which diversity and inclusion are still underexposed. And there are also examples outside Europe. Have a look at our Canadian and American colleagues, for instance. The American Academy of Neurology has designed an empowering and inspirational leadership program to help mid-career participants tackle gender disparities, to help them create a peer network with other female EAN members, and to help them advance to the top levels of leadership in their fields and within the academy. And the Canadian colleagues, we've had a presentation by Esther Buey from the Toronto University Hospital. The Canadian colleagues have established a Women in Neurology Fellowship. And again, AAN established a Women's Neurology Residency Training Curriculum to integrate evidence-based sex and gender-specific learning objectives. I do hope, Alicia, that following these examples, that in due time, we can offer similar opportunities in Europe. However, it's still early days, and we first need to make an inquiry whether there are already such initiatives within Europe.
Absolutely. And I think it's very nice, as you mentioned, also to look outside and to see whether opportunities in this sense are already available and how much we can translate that into the European environment. And also like the fact of having a support from the largest community of neurologists in Europe with regard to these topics is very important, as you mentioned. And then we come to the advice. So what advice would you give to aspiring neurologists who may be navigating gender-related challenges in their careers today?
Yeah, I have four advices. Actually, first, for those who are working as a neurologist or are in training to become a neurologist in Europe, become an EAN member. Depending on the years of experience, you can become a regular EAN member or a member of the RRFS like yourself. And you are actually a role model for starting RRFS members, taking the leadership role within RRFS, and being very visible at the Congress last year, or 2 years ago, taking the stage along with Professor Paul Bohn, last year's president. So you're a role model as well.
Oh, thank you.
Second advice, join the coordinating panel on diversity, equity, and inclusion if you are an EAN member. And third, find yourself a mentor who has experience with the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And fourth, there are lots of projects on diversity, equity, and inclusion in which EAN members participate, be it as a regular or an RRFS member, and to name a few. And you are familiar with those projects because you are also a member of the coordinating panel. Surveys amongst European neurologists about female leadership, developing a glossary for sexual and gender minorities, developing guidelines on sex and gender-specific aspects of treatment of neurological disorders like epilepsy and migraine. It is not only fun to work together on these projects, it will increase your visibility and that of EAN. And it will contribute to improvement of care for neurological patients. And after all, Alicia, that is our main goal.
Absolutely. That's true. And I, if I can add another point, I think joining this coordinating panel or these groups really makes you feel part of a community. And we are going towards the same goal. And this is really rewarding to feel that there are other people who are fighting with you for the same causes. And it's extremely rewarding, as I was saying. So during this podcast, we covered different topics. We talked about how gender influences career trajectories, mentorship dynamics, and the intersectionality of gender with ethnicity and socioeconomic background. We also highlighted the importance of having support networks and to work on education, which is a primary point to ensure that there is a gender-sensitive culture. We talked about the importance also of representation of women or sex and gender minorities in leadership positions and how that also creates a culture of diversity and inclusion and of acceptance. So we concluded on some good points, on some advice and some practical solution. So I hope that in a year time, well, maybe we'll meet again or in many years time, there will be many new courses and education programs, and that really we managed to change perspectives and culture on this important topic. Thank you so much for this conversation. It was really nice. And as I mentioned, it was a privilege to interview you.
Thank you very much, Alicia. I very much appreciated this interview.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.